Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
6:44, 16 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Reading from a NOLA.com story here from Mark Ballard. On a dark night with no moon and heavily overcast skies on November 30th, 1942, the USS New Orleans was one of 11 cruisers and destroyers sailing in formation in the waters near the Solomon Islands in the South Pacific Ocean. With that being said, I'm going to stop and introduce Corey Graff, curator and restoration manager for the National World War II Museum, to talk about the USS New Orleans, what's recently happened, and what's going to happen at the National World War II Museum. Good morning, Corey. How are you?
Doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm all right, sir. Corey's on the West Coast. He got up early to join us, and we do appreciate this. Corey, tell me, and I started purposely reading that paragraph because I want you to take us to the USS New Orleans, a little bit history of the ship and what happened that night near the Solomon Islands in the South Pacific Ocean. Then we'll get to the future. We'll go into the future and what happened recently and a future exhibit and so forth.
Yeah, the USS New Orleans was built actually in Brooklyn, of all things, but it still had that New Orleans flair. Instead of using champagne, they christened the ship with a bottle of Mississippi River water.
Really?
And it launched in it launched in 1933 and was part of the U.S. fleet. Of course, it was everywhere during the war in the Pacific. It was at Pearl Harbor. It was at Coral Sea. It was at Midway. And then we get to that night off of Guadalcanal. It was near Tassafaronga on that evening, and they were intercepting a Japanese supply convoy that was coming ashore trying to supply the Japanese troops on Guadalcanal, and the Japanese destroyers fired a big fan of torpedoes at the U.S. ship, and one of them hit the front end, the bow section of the New Orleans, and exploded. They were quite potent long-range torpedoes, and it amazingly enough blew the bow off of the ship, and the New Orleans didn't sink. It still had a lot of history left to go, but it left that bow way underwater in what they call Iron Bottom Sound off of Guadalcanal.
And the ammunition was stored in the front of the ship. Is that what I understand? Is that where the torpedo hit, which made it even worse?
That's right. It hit the forward magazine. One of the things on combat ships, you don't want to have all your ammunition in an area that's easily approached by airplanes and torpedoes, but down below they have all the storage, and it hit the storage and the ammunition for turrets 1 and 2 and exploded, just cleaved the bow completely off. 183 sailors actually were in that front section of the ship, including turret 1, which also fell into the water, and they perished that night, but the ship stayed afloat. It actually limped back to a place called Tulagi at like 1.5 knots, and they pulled it in really close to the shore because they were fairly certain it was going to sink at any moment, and started working on recovering the ship and bringing it back to life.
So I got a little, hand drawing here of a ship with a straight up horizontal stern and an angled bow, right? So if I were to go back about how far on this diagram, a third of the way when the bow that came off, a fourth of the way, about how far up did the bow fall? Do you have any idea or come off?
Yeah, about a third or fourth of the way. You want to go all the way back to the first turret. It happened in the middle of that. You see pictures of it in the shipyard afterwards, and it's just a big solid slice, and the second turret is sitting there, but the first turret is completely gone. So yeah, somewhere in the neighborhood of a third of the ship, maybe more like a fourth of the ship, was gone at that point.
How in the world did they keep it afloat, and how did they get it back to a dry dock or to a repair facility?
Well, so of course has bulkheads in the ship. There was a lot of leakage.
Hang on a second.
As you might imagine.
I'm sorry, Corey. Yeah. Let me jump in. A bulkhead would be a wall that would stop the water from sinking the rest of the ship.
That's right. Exactly. Okay. The walls, the vertical walls in the ship, and they definitely had to fight. The surviving sailors had to fight to keep the ship afloat. They use handy dilly pumps, and they work in shoring things up, and even to the point of like pushing mattresses into holes and things like that to keep the vessel afloat. They worked on it for several weeks, hidden against the side of the island in Tulagi, and they actually gathered camouflage netting and foliage to make it look like part of the jungle, if you will. And they went into the jungle and found shoring. They made their own logs out of wood and supported the front end of the ship, and they made a run for Australia of all places to get repairs. And moments into the sailing, they realized that they couldn't go forwards because the front end of the ship looked like a cigar that had been smashed out in an ashtray. Mm. And so they turned around and they went all the way to Australia backwards.
Mm. The battle itself happened at night?
It did. It happened at night. One of the things is the Japanese Navy was feared, especially at night, because they had many skills in fighting naval surface actions at night, and that's when they would resupply, and that's when the battle took place.
So I'm just we're going to pick it up when we come back, Corey. We've got to take a break, but I just want people to understand about the Greatest Generation, and that's what the World War II Museum does so great. It tells that story. It's the middle of the night. You're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. You get hit by a torpedo. You lose 118 of your shipmates. And now you're tasked with, okay, you got to put all that aside. It's dark, the middle of the Pacific. We're in a battle here, and we're trying to keep the ship afloat. And they manage.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
To do it. Is that about accurate?
That's it. It's your job to survive, and that's what the sailors of the USS New Orleans did.
And I don't know if you know this or not, but the average age would be what, maybe 20-something?
Yeah, about 20-something. There's certainly young men aboard the ship, 17, 18, 19 years old, 20. You're an old man by the time you're 25 when you're in the Navy.
My dad quit high school, and I've told the story before, to go serve in the Pacific, not on the New Orleans, but and had a priest forge his birth certificate so he could join at 16. And I don't think people realize just the valor that it took, the young people that were making the decisions that they made and showing the courage that they could to make sure the United States won the war. We'll talk about what they discovered with the bow of the New Orleans when we come back. 651, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. Graf is our guest. I'm Tommy Tucker, WWL 656, Curator, Restoration Manager for the National World War II Museum. We're talking about the USS New Orleans that had between a third and a fourth of the ship, the bow, blown off, but yet managed to make it back to port and did some more fighting in World War II. Tell me what happened recently with finding the bow, Corey.
Yeah, it's kind of an amazing thing. We'd always at the National World War II Museum knew we were going to do an exhibit on the USS New Orleans, and so we're in the middle of developing an exhibit, and then we get this news that the bow, which is probably the largest existing piece of the ship, is discovered in Iron Bottom Sound, and it was amazing for us to be able to see those underwater pictures of the bow sitting there on the bottom of Iron Bottom Sound.
There's no way to salvage any of that, right?
Most likely not. It would be considered a war grave. Of course, many sailors went down with the ship, and it's in a relatively protected area. Iron Bottom Sound, of course, Guadalcanal was heavily contested early in the war, and there's many sunken shipwrecks there.
This is no more, less sacred than the USS Alabama at Pearl Harbor, is it?
The USS Alabama is in Mobile, but yeah.
No, wait. What am I talking about? In the tiers of the, what am I thinking of at Pearl Harbor?
Missouri?
Missouri, that's what I'm thinking of. I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah, the Missouri battleship is in at Pearl Harbor. No, it is definitely part of our World War II heritage. And, of course, being the USS New Orleans, the city's ship, it's sort of special to the city and Louisiana as well.
People that have had a rough night, maybe they have a toothache, maybe they got this, they got that, they're pacing the floors. I the story you told of the middle of the night, you're 20 years old, all hell breaks loose around you, the third of the ship is blown off, you lose 118 shipmates, and yet, just put it all behind you, keep pushing, that's all you can do. And that's what the World War II Museum does in such great manner, is tell all of the different stories that, boy, just amazingly added up to victory for the United States and the Allies in World War II. What's the timeline on the USS New Orleans exhibit for the National World War II Museum, Corey?
The USS New Orleans exhibit will open sometime next year in 2026. We're looking at the spring or summer. So look for it, and you'll be able to hear the whole history of the ship, not only the Battle of Tassafaronga, but what happens afterwards as well. The New Orleans goes on to fight in almost every major battle in the Pacific in World War II, and is there when the Japanese surrender. Sort of the end of the story is kind of amazing as well. They came back through the Panama Canal, and they got a chance, the sailors and the New Orleans with a new bow got a chance to be the guests of honor at Mardi Gras 1946. Right here in New Orleans, so they were parked at the end of Canal Street and went and attended the festivities.
Awesome.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.